You're listening to the Chapman Cast, a podcast about religion and life.
Welcome to the Chapman Cast. My name is Pierce, and this is an interview episode. I'll be interviewing Glenn Mac Fraser, and we're going to be talking about his launching a church in Austin. Now, Mac, the first question I have, what does launching a church in Austin mean?
Depends on how basic you want to get.
What is the difference between launching and planting a church?
Traditionally, when people talk about the creation of a new church congregation, they usually refer to it as church planting. A typical way of planting a church is you have a group of people who are in the same religion, in the same faith, the same denomination. This is all Christian terminology. Who get together and they spend time together, and there's a pastor with them. And they spend time, usually a long time, meeting in homes, doing Bible studies, building up to a point where they feel ready to go out to the community and start to invite other people to do the same, and then slowly over time build up what can eventually become a fully functioning church congregation. Church launching is a term that was actually coined by a Baptist named Nelson Searcy, who launched a church up in New York, and another one named Ron Sylvia, who started a church down in Florida. And both of them were heavily influenced by the way Rick Warren started his church in Saddleback Valley in California. And what distinguishes launching is rather than starting with a core and then slowly building outward, which is planting, and it's a slow accreting process, church launching moves much more rapidly and tries to build the church as quickly as possible out of the crowd. Sometimes it's referred to as crowd to core church planting. Instead of trying to build up a core group that's very doctrinally steeped and trained and getting them to then expand the circle, you're going immediately out to newcomers, and as soon as they're in the door, you're asking them to help build the church, and you're getting them involved in church uses right from the start.
So it sounds like it's not just that the speed is different, but also the immediate attention is more outward focused rather than inward focused. If that's true, why Austin?
For the new church, you could plant a church or launch a church pretty much anywhere, and it would be an improvement because, statistically speaking, we don't exist.
Could you clarify that?
I would love for somebody someday to do this math for me and to figure it out. I haven't actually figured out the number, but just imagine, if you will, what the average drive time for a human being on earth is to a new church congregation. If, for instance, right now you live anywhere in Texas, you're going to have to leave the state to get into a new church congregation. It's a really big state. I could start a church, a teeny tiny one, out in the middle of the prairie, and immediately the drive time would be cut in half for everyone that's in Texas. So you could start a church anywhere. But the first few churches that we launch really need to be in places where we have the maximum potential for success. There are a couple of different ways of going about it. One is satellite churches, which is a strategy that's, I think, very important to pursue. Ivyland's a great example of a satellite church. But we also have to start new centers that we can build satellites from. I've known that I wanted to plant a church for many years. This is something that I've been thinking about since I was in theological school. And my wife, Jillian, same thing. And so we've had this ongoing conversation, okay, well, where? And it's not a matter of who needs it, because everybody needs it, so where can we be successful? And there are a couple of different things involved in choosing a place. Basically, when you're launching a church, you're seeing an intersection of three different things: the local culture and people, the church, the belief system, and the particular church planter. So you're looking for a place where the culture is likely to be receptive to the doctrine, but also where the planter and the culture can interact well. Austin is it's a religiously diverse city. It's very open-minded. It's not what you would normally think of as a Texan city. So that makes it new church-friendly demographics, as some of the ministers in our church have referred to it. But also, because of my personal background in the technology industry, and in fact, before I became a minister, I was in technology, and I interacted with a lot of people that were actually commuting from Austin to places like California and New York. And so I speak the language of the culture of the people that we're planting among. And so it's a nice connection between those three. On top of all that, Austin is a city that people are moving to. It's demographically young. people that are in those phases of life where they're more likely to choose a new way of seeing the Lord, you're more likely to find them in Austin. These are people that either have just moved, just gotten married, just about to have children.
Well, you talked about the reason why we want to launch a church in Austin as opposed to somewhere else is because your personality matches Austin, and Austin's a good demographic for the church. Is there any doctrine that leads you to those things?
There's no strong, specifically doctrinal reason for Austin over, say, Los Angeles, New York, Orlando, Charlotte, other places that I've looked at as well. The one sort of overarching doctrinal guidance in terms of planting is recognition of the fact that anywhere where Christianity has had a firm hold is going to be hard. It's not soft ground. That's hard ground. I'm not one of those very rare people who can launch something cross-culturally. I can't go to Zaire and start a church. That's not how I'm made. The best places, doctrinally speaking, to launch churches are in Africa. And we see that in the way the church is expanding in Africa. I even said when I presented this plan to the General Church Board, really the most bang for the buck, so to speak, the most effective places to be planting churches are all in Africa. This doesn't mean we shouldn't also be trying to plant in other places as well. Doctrinally speaking, the way a church grows is there's a phase in which the church is being made up out of remnants from the older church that will be receptive to the new revelation. And then there's a follow-on phase in which it expands among people that really had no influence from the older church, among Gentiles.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk today about whether or not people who grew up in the generically Christian West count as Gentiles. Just because they technically grew up in America and America is technically a Christian nation, if their parents never took them to church, does that mean that they're not really Christian?
That's an interesting question. And there are a couple of different pieces to it. The writings talk about Christian Gentiles, mostly referring, as I understand it, to Catholics. And the argument there is that the Catholic Church closed the word to their people for so many centuries that they were effectively like Gentiles. Bob Youngie recently delivered a paper on dealing with the cultural effects of the Christian world. And a lot of the things that we point to as ills of Western culture are essentially the effect of Christian culture. And so, yeah, the typical 20-year-old today who may have never been to a church, the concept of a pastor comes from The Simpsons, you know, all that, they're still living in a culture that is a result of its Christian origins. I don't think you can say they are truly Gentile, but at the same time, if you look at a lot of the cultural shift that's been going on in this country, the difference between the postmoderns and the earlier generations, being the baby boomers and the builders, there's a move away from traditional Western logical linear analysis. There's good and bad in that. That's a signal of, well, our technical theological term is the vastation of the church.
So the vastation of the church usually means an emptying out of bad and false things. And sometimes good and true things. But generally it means that it's more empty.
Right.
And we keep talking about the Christian world as if it's not us. Mm-hmm. Are we Christian?
Yeah, absolutely we're Christian. If you really want to be snooty about it, you could say we're more Christian than anybody else. There's not a lot of value, I don't think, in saying that.
Well, we've talked about on other episodes what makes us distinctly different from other religions. What key messages are doctrinally you going to be bringing to the people of Austin to distinguish yourself as different from the other Christians in Austin?
So the name of the church that we're launching in Austin is New Way Church.
I will link more information in the show notes, which you can check on your own.
Thank you. New Way is the name of the church. Part of the reason for choosing that is that what we are offering and encouraging is a new way of looking at a lot of old ideas. For instance, one of the central things that's really going to distinguish us and does distinguish us as a movement is that we have a new way of looking at the Bible. The Bible is still recognized as a significant document, even though there's a lot of question about its validity and its authenticity and its usefulness. We have a way of looking at it, which really, it's a game changer in terms of understanding what its real value in a person's life is. Because we have this way of looking at deeper truths that have been hidden in it all along. Just time and again, I've found that that is one of the areas where people get most excited and have the most breakthroughs, and it's spiritually very fertile ground to just talk about that.
Can you give an example of one of those deeper truths that you will be talking about and focusing on?
That the creator of the universe, this God Jehovah that you see in the Old Testament, and the loving man and savior of Jesus in the New Testament are in fact the exact same person. And while on the surface it looks like you have this story about this angry creator God who needs somehow or another to be mollified by his son, you look deeper and you can see how really it's written that way just because we as people and the human race, particularly at that time, weren't really ready to fully comprehend the nature of a truly loving God. Okay, so a lot of people come from dysfunctional families. Sometimes it's very, very severe. And you'll notice that when somebody comes out of an abusive family, it twists their understanding of normal human relationships. The human race itself fell so far away from God that it was as if succeeding generations were growing up in abusive homes. And our whole understanding of what love is, it just got mangled. While God is love itself, I mean, that's one of our, you want to talk about like key ideas. That is a key idea that people outside of the church, outside of Christianity, all over the world, people are ready to accept the idea that God is love. But how do you square that with a traditional understanding of the story of humanity and Christianity? It doesn't fit. But by looking at the deeper truths within the Bible, you can start to see how, on a deeper level, really, it is a story about a God who is love, who was then misunderstood by the very people who were writing down the pages of the Old Testament. But they were guided to write it in such a way that we can peel back that outer layer and see, no, this really is the act of love itself. And once you understand that Jehovah is love, Jesus is love, and Jehovah and Jesus, they're the same person, that's huge. The person who created every last molecule and every last moment of the entire universe through all eternity, physically took on a body, walked among us because he loves us. That's huge beyond belief.
That does sound distinctly different than any other Christianity, and I assume any other Christianity in Austin. That God is one, and that there is a deeper meaning and an internal sense to the word. Sounds like two key doctrines that you're going to be focusing on. Would you say those are the two biggest doctrines?
Understanding the oneness of God and how to see the deeper meaning in the word in the Bible, those are the two core ones. We also have a lot of unique stuff to say around human relationships, particularly marriage. We believe in marriage being an eternal relationship, not just a temporal one. And once you start to look at your relationships with other people through that lens, it changes how you relate to people.
So you're saying not just marriage lasts forever in heaven, but that all your relationships have a certain eternal aspect, that we continue to have relationships in heaven or hell or wherever we end up?
Right, exactly. And in fact, that gets to another one of these central distinguishing ideas. The life after death that we're talking about is not an abstract one. It's not, you know, angels on clouds. It's not being a wind. I fully believe that after we die, we lead completely human existences. We have arms and legs. We have friendships. We do things to entertain ourselves. We have occupations. It makes the life after death meaningful and real in a way that for many people it just isn't.
These all sound like really great things. How are you going to go about spreading this and finding people and calling them to the church in Austin?
Every human being is born with an innate ability to see truth in its own light. This means that education, cleverness, intelligence, genius, none of that's required to see truth. That's useful for understanding a whole bunch of things on a natural level. But on a spiritual level, when a person is confronted with something which is spiritually true, there's a small part within every single person that resonates with that, and it rings true. It's my conviction that if I put out these things that we as a community believe, that there are going to be people out there that are going to hear the ring of truth, and what's more, say, you know what, I've always believed that, but I didn't know there were other people that believed it too. Now, you can't really accomplish that very effectively through media by itself, at least not through advertising. You can't spiritually transform a person with a postcard. My first task is to draw a crowd on a Sunday morning. And you can do that with saying something surprising but true. You know, that the life of religion is to do good, or that marriage really can last forever. Something which sounds true, get somebody interested, and then invite them to try out the community. It's then what happens on Sunday morning, in worship, in teaching, that is the real opportunity to really explore one of these ideas in depth, with the understanding, the expectation that because this is such cool stuff, and this is such true stuff, and most importantly, such life-changing stuff, that if they're willing to try it out, I know it's going to change their lives. And so they'll want to come back. And you know, a lot of the people won't want to try it out. A lot of people will come expecting something different and won't come back. But if I can get 100 people to show up on Sunday morning, I'm willing to bet one of those people is going to have their life changed. The second step is to get them to try it out. The third step is to have a community that is welcoming and supportive of somebody like that so that they can then take the next step and the next step, and they can join in with other people that care about the same things, believe the same things. Those are the three parts. Is get the attention of a crowd by speaking a surprising truth. Go deep into what that truth means so that somebody responds to it. And when that person responds to it, find ways of connecting them with the rest of the community.
I look forward to talking to you more about Austin, especially as progress continues. Thank you for joining me. And this has been another episode of the Chapman Cast.
Content on the Chapman Cast is owned by its hosts and interview guests. Find us online at newchurchperspective.com/ChapmanCast. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends. We welcome your feedback in the comments section of the website. Thank you for listening.